Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of F This Movie, the podcast that knows the name of your favorite scary movie.
The podcast that stabs you.
Nice. In the ears with truth. And movie truth.
And in the eyes with mediocrity and bad dialogue.
That's right, folks. We're talking about Scream 4 tonight on F This Movie. I'm joined once again by JB.
Don't you mean Scrafum? That's the way it's spelled on the marquee.
Yeah, I can't say it.
I believe it's Scrafum.
Scriform. Don't you get it? It's edgy when you put the number right in the title.
Wait, is it meta?
It might be meta. If you say something's meta...
Is this a reboot?
You're aware. It's a... This is... I'm sorry. A scream... Shoot. A screamake? Or a... Shriekwell, I think they said.
Is this a reboot or is it up its own ass?
This is a poo boot. You are listening to F This Movie. Find us online at fthismovie.blogspot.com and email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook and all that good stuff. You can't find us at fthismovie.com because there are people in this world who are bastard people.
And you just want to punch them in their ass face.
That's right. We are talking about Scream 4 tonight, but before we start making fun of that movie, without spoilers, by the way, because the movie just came out, we just got home from seeing it, so this is one of those that's kind of tricky because you haven't had really time to reflect on how the movie sucks, so you're making it up as you go along, like the makers of Scream 4. So, but we're not going to be spoiling it until maybe the very end, and we'll give plenty of warnings for those of you who want to hear about the movie but don't want it ruined to tune out for the last 15 minutes or so, and then those of you who saw it or would like it ruined can listen on as we spoil things about the movie.
Or for those of you who figure it out halfway through the movie.
Oh, sure.
And decide to leave the movie and get in line right now for a sneak preview of Super 8.
Yes. Please have those. I went to see this Rio, but it turns out it's Rio the movie.
It's animated.
Yeah,
and it's by the makers of Ice Age.
Yeah,
and I'm not required to go see those anymore.
No,
so I don't.
And I didn't go to see it.
Okay,
but they just keep calling it Rio the movie, so there's no confusion.
There's going to be a lot of middle-aged men who go to that, and about halfway through, they're going to be very disappointed and turn and say, "No titty?" Speaking of Rio, I just saw a TV commercial for Hoodwink 2.
Good.
And we have good. Often talked on F This Movie about bad children's films. This looks like a demented high school laptop project. The animation, first of all, the character design is awful and weird and ugly. But the animation is like something you'd see on a local insurance commercial.
Right.
I guess if it's for kids, people will go, oh, and this one's in 3D, so.
I barely remember Hoodwinked 1 coming out.
My God.
There apparently was a movie called Hoodwinked, and now there's Hoodwinked 2.
It must have made money.
JB, besides Scream 4, have you seen anything good lately?
Yes.
What is the name of the good movie that you saw recently?
I saw Super.
Hey, I saw Super.
With you.
Oh, right.
And, Patrick wrote a wonderful review.
Thank you.
That I completely agree with.
Thank you.
It is well worth your time, and it was so much better than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Patrick says that he gives major applause to films that are full of ideas. Super has some very, very disturbing things to say about love, about revenge, about media, about religion in a lot of ways. It is well worth your time. It is super.
It is super, and it is available on demand now. If there's no theater near you that is showing it, and it is kind of hard to come by because it's in very limited release, you can find it on demand.
So now you don't have to drive to the Music Box.
That's right.
The happiest place on earth during rush hour and get major tusseris and anxiety because you're afraid you might be late to the screening or miss the trailer for Uncle Boomy has lived many
who
lives.
Who can recall his past lives. But you wouldn't have seen it with the audience that we saw it with, and I'm glad we did, and I commented on it in the review, which you can find at fthismovie.blogspot.com. Because it's obvious that the movie is playing differently to different people in the audience.
The audience we saw it with, seemingly going through some sort of Einsteinian time warp alternate reality gig, they were in the theater with us, and yet they were watching a different movie
right.
than the movie we were
right.
watching.
Absolutely.
They were watching the movie they desperately needed that to be.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right.
They had an Irony Jones. And I just caught a new documentary about Bill Hicks, who was amazing. I think he's one of the five greatest stand-up comedians who ever lived.
Who are the other four? Just to put you on the spot. It's not F this stand-up comedy, but let's talk about it. Jay Leno, obviously, number one.
No. Jay Leno is in comedy hell. Although, very early in his career, we went to see him live.
Yeah.
And he was funny.
That's what everybody says.
He was I mean, I'm talking about, like, maybe 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Really funny, really long show. At the end, you wanted him to stop because I think it's one of the few times my sides, you hear that all the time.
Right.
My sides actually hurt from laughter. But no, I would suggest Lenny Bruce, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, Bill Hicks, and Patton Oswalt.
Okay. That's a good list.
Yeah. And I was lucky enough to see Bill Hicks live and was a really, really big fan of his. And maybe the documentary works as an introduction to him and his career, but I've read several books about him. I followed his career avidly, and I just don't think the film does him justice.
And that film is called American, The Bill Hicks Story, which is also available on demand.
And in a couple weeks on DVD and
right.
Blu-ray.
In case you've already watched Super, which you should see first, and you really want to see a subpar documentary about Bill Hicks, American, The Bill Hicks Story.
Spend your $6.99 if you have Comcast. I would spend that money on Super.
Yeah, definitely. I don't have much to talk about because I wrote the review of Super, and we're going to talk about Scream 4 in a minute, but I did, on DVD, catch up with a movie that I purposefully avoided last year, and that movie is called The Tourist. Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie.
Okay.
And there's not much to say except that it's just, it's so boring and so much of what's sort of wrong now with studio movies in the way that they package certain elements and think, well, this will bring people out.
But Patrick, said JB, that film received many Golden Globe nominations.
The bastion of artistic integrity that is the Golden Globe nomination.
I remember before The Tourist came out, and I thought, I think it's interesting and it's telling that you said the name of the film, and I couldn't remember it.
I had to stop and think of it before I told you that I saw it. I had to remind myself I wanted to call it The Soloist, which
so
is a different movie.
We're going to file this in the instantly forgettable category, but I
right.
remember so well, they put out a trailer, which I thought was good, and I was giving it a lot of credit for not giving a lot away, and then within 2 or 3 weeks, they released a second trailer, and I think you can guess what that second trailer did, and I just said, why on earth would you do that? Spoiler alert, if Hitchcock was working today,
mm-hmm.
the trailer for Psycho,
mm-hmm.
he's his mom! That's how the trailer would start. In the darkness in the theater, he's his mom! And then you hear a record scratch.
I was just gonna say, like, Norman's got some mother issues.
If you like Mrs. Doubtfire, you'll love Psycho with an exclamation point.
A mother of a comedy. Yeah, The Tourist is lame. Lame and forgettable. And, you know, Johnny Depp is capable of being interesting 7 or 8 years ago, and Angelina Jolie, I'm supposed to like looking at her, but I was so bored by the two of them.
I said this on a previous podcast. Depp was doing the most amazing work in films that didn't make money.
Right.
The minute the film started mm-hmm. to reach an audience, something happens.
And this is a movie where it's like, it's a pretty straightforward part, so he has to just add his weird quirk to it, so he just sort of mumbles and shuffles around because he's inventing a character out of thin air.
Johnny Depp mumbling? How can it be?
Anyway, so do not see The Tourist or American, The Bill Hicks Story. Definitely see super. Don't think that it's just like Kick-Ass, like, oh, I saw Kick-Ass, I didn't like it. A girl killed people. Super is a very different movie and very good.
That's true.
Let's talk about Scream 4.
Let's talk about our turds.
Let's start with Scream 4. I don't know where to start the discussion of Scream 4, except to say...
it's a movie.
It's a movie with a part 4 in the title.
It's longer than 90 minutes.
Several of the original cast members have returned, almost in guest-starring roles. This felt like the Scream that was designed to spin off... like the other Scream franchise, like when what's his name stopped by, like Different Strokes, and then you know, and then he got his own show that lasted 2 weeks, but Kim Richards was on it.
We need younger victims,
right?
And yet, when the original three, which is Courtney Cox, David Arquette, and Neve Campbell, are on screen, specifically in one scene between David Arquette and Neve Campbell, which is pretty early on,
yeah.
They have a wonderful chemistry together.
Yeah.
The scene is just dialogue. It's exposition. And it's kind of sweet. And it reminds you that those two are capable of being engaging. Oddly enough, all of the stuff between Arquette and Courtney Cox, it's impossible to watch that.
Right.
And not think about the fact that they just split up and there's all this nonsense going on.
Well, Courtney Cox appears to be in a different movie, and that's not entirely her fault. I mean, her performance has always, I guess, fit the character in that it's sort of just shrill and unlikable, but it's obvious that they just didn't have any idea what to do with her, and so she's sort of sidelined with this nonsense storyline.
And on the same note, after the film, we were talking for some reason about movies about teachers, and I pointed out that at the end of Mr. Holland's Opus, they perform this symphony that he's spent his whole life writing, and surprise, it isn't very good. And Patrick pointed out that very often in movies, when something's supposed to be great, of course it's great in the reality of the film because they're paying people to applaud it or say bravo or that's the greatest thing you've ever accomplished. But in real life, it's awful. Several times during the film, Courtney Cox is supposed to show that she's a hard-ass bitch. And what they have coming out of her mouth is milquetoast nonsense insults. In fact, at one point, she delivers one of these weak bon mots and then turns around and says, I still got it. No. Which is almost like a drama's version of explaining the joke.
Right.
Hey, you people in the audience, you're supposed to think that worked.
The problem with Scream 4, the overall problem, is that it fails to justify its reason for being. Now, we know that the reason for being is to make money. It's a successful franchise. It's a brand name that people will go see. But artistically speaking, if you're going to sit down, if you're Kevin Williamson and you haven't had a hit for a long time and you're like, I'm going to go back to the well and write Scream 4... you need to sort of justify why we are coming back to these characters, why we're coming back to this town. And the movie fails to do that.
But I would add, oddly enough, it falls all over itself trying to justify its
existence.
Right,
that's where I was going.
It's top the previous films.
And it's really going out of its way to sort of point out how relevant it now is. Because
or clever.
It's incorporating technology. It's making fun of all of the remakes and making fun of the Saw movies and all these things. But like when the original Scream came out in 96, and I still like the original Scream a lot.
I do too.
You know, it came out after almost a decade of very few horror films coming out. Horror was pretty much dead. The 80s had kind of killed it, and it was dead for a long time. And Scream came out, and it felt new and relevant, and it felt like here's somebody with something new to say, and it felt like you know, when you hear this new band on the radio and you're like, I can't believe nobody's thought of doing that before. That works. That's new and fresh and exciting.
It's very clever.
And now, you know, here's Scream 4 that is very much the movie that the original Scream was making fun of. Just tired, has nothing to say. It's the old man horror movie.
We mock the thing we are to be.
Not the new kid anymore. And it tries to point that out as though knowing that you're just a shitty rehash. gives you a pass, but it doesn't.
And in a weird way, that quality of it reminded me of something that was just on Saturday Night Live last week. That they started with the tired political sketch, and Fred Armisen is playing our president, and he's pointing out that no one is happy. And he has this litany of reasons why we're unhappy. And one of them is that Saturday Night Live isn't good anymore. As if it's such a funny joke to point out the truth about your own show,
right,
that you obviously don't believe, but you think by acknowledging it, you're proving that it's not true.
Right.
But the only way it could be funny is it's funny if it's true. So it's like we've reached the limits of irony.
Right, right. I just don't know if you're allowed to make fun of the fact. And it is jarring to hear. At one point, it's in the trailers, Hayden Panettiere's character rattles off this list of horror films that have been remade. And it is incredible how long it goes.
Yeah.
Because you just realize they've done all of them. But I don't know that you can be the guy, again, you know, kind of talking to Kevin Williamson, I don't know if you could be the guy that is making fun of that when you're writing Scream 4 and you have nothing new to say and you're just...
Well, you make Scream, and like you pointed out, Scream was something new, and Scream did a whole bunch of things very cleverly. Among them, you have this ending that's honestly very difficult to puzzle out if you're watching the film honestly, and yet when it's revealed... doesn't feel like a cheat.
Right.
I always compared the end of the original Scream to the end of the original Psycho.
Yeah.
It's very clever.
Right.
And it works. But if you're going to keep making sequels, then you can't make a fourth sequel in which you make fun of sequels, including your own. Have your cake or eat it, one
right.
of the two.
And again, the movie seems to think that just by acknowledging these things that that gives it a pass. You know, again, it feels very much just like this old man horror movie that Wes Craven is out of touch. And Kevin Williamson, who used, you know, was sort of the voice of young people in the mid and late 90s between the Scream movies and Dawson's Creek and I Know What You Did Last Summer. I mean, he was like the go-to young adult guy. And he seems out of touch. And it's very apparent in a lot of the dialogue in the movie where you have these characters trying... You know, he's trying to write dialogue that sounds like things kids would say, you know, kids with their technology, and they throw out, you know, the net, and I'm going to upload it on the web. And young people don't talk the way that Kevin Williamson seems to think. It's an old person approximating what he thinks young people talk like.
And beyond the diction and the vocabulary, the dialogue is just awful.
Everywhere.
In a film that's not very good, the dialogue is particularly bad. Another thing that I think is a major problem with the film, and I have taken to calling this the MASH syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
In the first film, mm-hmm. you get a representative sampling of teenagers,
mm-hmm.
and one of them works at a video store.
Mm-hmm.
The actor's name was...
Jamie Kennedy.
The Jamie Kennedy character. He likes horror films, and he knows a lot about horror films, and he's the horror film guy, and he has the little soliloquies. Here are the rules. You got to follow the rules. And that makes sense. When MASH became a television show, you had this Mobile Army Surgical Hospital with one funny guy, Hawkeye. Hawkeye was the funny guy. He's a cut-up, and everyone else had different parts and different characters. As the series MASH went along, and it became more and more popular, and the actors started making more and more money, they all began to get fevered egos. And by the end of that show, every single one of them had to be funny.
Right.
It became, we're in surgery, close to enemy lines, and it's like we're at the Algonquin Round Table,
mm-hmm.
because the quips are flying fast and furious, and it just doesn't work. And in Scream 4... everyone
right.
is a horror movie expert, and
right.
everyone is ironic and meta, and
right.
it just doesn't work.
And I know that, again, they're thinking that that's how people talk now, and, you know, part of that is as a result of the original Scream, that Scream was a movie that made people super pop culture savvy in the film, and then that reflected back into reality, and now they're trying to reflect reality back in the film, and it doesn't work. But also, I know that, you know, Wes Craven thinks he's making a commentary on technology because there are scenes where three different people are texting and calling and talking on cell phones, and now I'm getting a call on this phone, and it's
a
mess.
And there's a webcam, right. And it's turned around the wrong way, so we're seeing behind the person, but oh, what's that over there? It's another webcam.
And even the webcam stuff, and in the trailers, when I saw that the movie was going to kind of go this way, that the new spin that they put on it is that now, you know, for the killer to be relevant in 2011, he's got to film his murders, and
that's not a new spin.
Exactly. I mean, that's Diary of the Dead, which already felt kind of irrelevant when Romero made that a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so far behind the curve, I think, again, for a franchise that originally felt ahead of the curve.
Someone felt that you could dust off the Scream franchise and make it relevant again by buying the cast iPhones.
It's Scream the new class, because again, when you go, and I apologize if I spoil elements of the first three Screams. I'll try not to, but again, we're not going to spoil Scream 4, so you can keep listening.
I am.
Okay. The original, you know, Scream is obviously the law of diminishing returns, because the original Scream, when you think about it, there actually aren't very many murders in the original Scream. And it focuses on a pretty small group of people. It's really those five major characters, the kids. And Neve Campbell is very much at the center as Sydney Prescott, the heroine. And it's her story. She's Laurie Strode. And so you got to know the characters as people. And
they were all different.
And they were all different. And so they're, what eventually happens with all of them has meaning. And in Scream 2, the scope gets a little bigger. And by Scream 3, which I just rewatched, I tried to rewatch all three of them, Scream 3 is a terrible mess, largely because it just introduces a ton of people. None of them matter. They're all just fodder. They're these actors who are making a movie, and you don't care about any of them. You don't know any of them. They're just a body count waiting to happen. And you would hope that Scream 4 would say, let's learn from the mistakes of Scream 3. Dial it back a little. Let's try and be a little bit more like the first film. But I would say it's even worse than Scream 3 in that regard, because there are way more characters, way more murders. And once again, Neve Campbell is really not at the center of her own film.
This goes back to your earlier comment that the more I sat there and watched the film, the more it began to speak of when are these particular actors available? Because many of Neve Campbell's scenes are very self-contained.
I thought all of the three original, Arquette, Courtney Cox, and Neve Campbell, I thought all seemed to be shot on their free time, you know, when they're off from their TV shows or whatever, because they seem to be in a separate movie.
There's a scene where Arquette talks to Courtney Cox on the phone. And obviously, that's always shot that way
right. In
movies. But particularly with Neve Campbell, her stuff seemed to be very, very self-contained. Speaking of body count,
yes,
there's a fascinating article on Slate that I recommend to all of you, where the gentleman who wrote it has this theory about the body count in horror movies, specifically in horror movie franchises. And there's actually a lovely a graph where he shows you the way it works. And depending on what number sequel it is, the body count has to be upped. And then he concludes it has more to do with when the film was made. But bottom line, at the end of the article, he predicts the body count of Scream 4,
okay. Based
on his scientific theory.
Right.
And on the way home from the movie, my wife and I did a quick count.
Did you? Okay.
He was only off by one.
No kidding.
Not bad.
Wow. Well, and what he didn't know was that someone had a coronary off camera when they learned about a murder. He was right on. It becomes this waiting game. I mean, all horror movies are like this. But again, the original Scream, you didn't necessarily know how things were going to shake out. And that was good. That was interesting. Because now it's this waiting game, because you have a supporting cast of recognizable faces who are largely unlikable and obviously disposable. There was a sequence, and I won't say who it is or what the scene is, maybe until the spoiler section. There's a character that obviously isn't going to make it to the end of the film, who at one point is isolated for, you know, 6 or 7 minutes and is sort of stalked by the killer. And I instantly, as soon as that scene began, I just kind of sank in my seat, because I could check out for the next 7 minutes, because I'm just waiting around until this person is killed. Because a good horror film, the tension comes from not knowing what's going to happen, right? But if we're just wait, it's just I'm just waiting until this thing happens.
So what we have here is anti-tension, which some people know as boredom.
Right, and that's what it was. And the performances again are very much all over the place.
Very much nine characters in search of a common theme. It seems as if every single one of them is in a different film.
Yes.
Neve Campbell is in a small personal film about a woman working out her demons. And Hayden,
Panettiere.
Hayden Pantene from Heroes is in a very different film altogether.
Right. She's in a Kevin Williamson sassy movie. And I'm not a fan of hers, but I will say when she was on screen, I didn't hate it because she seemed to have some energy in her performance. And a lot of the people don't, particularly the Culkin boy, who obviously has decided he's going to go sleepy. That's his move. And especially Emma Roberts, the niece of Julia Roberts, who is movie death whenever she is on screen.
Yeah.
I mean, her career obviously can only be explained by nepotism because she brings nothing to a movie. And she's on screen a lot, and she's not good at all.
Alison Brie.
Yes. Of whom I am a fan.
Has a role in the film as a Sydney's publicist. And about halfway through, I began to wonder if Alison Brie had played the niece, if that would have actually worked better, because Alison Brie brings something to the party. A couple podcasts ago, Patrick made a comment that I've sort of been mulling over in my head over and over, as I am liable to do. And he said, this film speaks of a script with all different colored pages. And as you know, that means that portions of it have been rewritten. And I know from reading some articles about this film that Kevin Williamson finished a script that most everyone was pretty happy with. And then he had to go work on this TV show, and the Weinsteins brought in some other writers.
Aaron Kruger, specifically, who wrote Scream 3 and sort of killed the franchise.
You want to bring him back. And I thought the very beginning was reasonably clever.
Yes, as did I.
Every so often, something would bubble to the surface that said, part of the original screenplay,
right,
part of the original vision. And then the film would go back to sleep for 7 minutes. And parts of the film, it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Parts of the film want to be this fun, as my wife put it, it's not a creepy, suspenseful J-horror remake. It's a haunted house movie. And I thought it was best when it was throwing those things at us that would make us jump. Because that's something horror movies do well, and that's something mm-hmm. I enjoy. And I counted 4 or 5 big jumps in this, so there's that. I also thought, and I can't spoil it yet, that there was something at the end of the film that I sort of liked how they did. But okay, we'll get to that in a minute. This has rewrite all over it. This has reshoot
yes.
all over it.
Yes.
It's not a cohesive whole.
There was an article about Scream 4 in a recent issue of Entertainment Weekly, and they were talking about some of the issues with the script, and Kevin Williamson and either Harvey or Bob Weinstein had kind of a big falling out and haven't spoken, and both claim, no, it's fine, it was because I had to go work on my show, and we love Kevin Williamson, but there's an interesting quote, and I know Bob runs Dimension, but I want to say the quotes were from Harvey. About the script, he says, Kevin had to leave, and so yes, we did bring Aaron Kruger on to do some rewrites and some, polishes or whatever, but trust me, this is Kevin's script. And I thought it was interesting. I've never seen a producer try and distance himself from someone that he hired to do extra work, who came in and did him a favor.
Yeah.
And now he's trying to say, no, this guy who did Scream 3, this isn't his. This is the one you like. This is Kevin Williamson. Don't worry, everybody. And I know for a fact there were a few reshoots, one of which I guess we can get to when we talk about spoilers. A very high body count. I thought the editing, and I will say, even Screams 2 and 3, which become increasingly problematic, I think are edited very well. And a guy named Patrick Lussier did the editing, and he has since gone on to be a director of, like, My Bloody Valentine 3D he did, and Drive Angry 3D. He's the 3D guy. The editing in the first Scream, in particular, I think is really good, and in this movie, I thought it was bad. Shots went on way too long, there were awkward beats, and honestly, I mean, it seemed like they were really going for a high gore quotient, because there were a number of scenes where Ghostface is about to plunge the knife into someone, and the music swells, and the person screams, and you could very easily cut to the next thing and keep things moving. And we know that that person is dead. We get it. But instead, we get a scene of him sticking the knife in and then pulling it out, and the person holding the wound, and the blood comes out, and they fall down. And this, it makes for... The pacing is wrong. The pacing is off in the movie.
I beg to differ. I like to see the knife. I need to see the knife.
Well, and then
I like it when he stabbed them.
And that's another...
And the blood comes out of the mouth.
That's another mistake.
Stab. In fact, I sit in the theater and cheer him on. They showed it twice. They only show the knife, I think, 17... 18 times would be better, and the blood always comes out of the mouth. Why can't the blood come out of the eyes or the nose or the ear? That might be a way to make it better.
That's another mistake that the movie makes, though, is that it seems to think that watching a series of people get stabbed by a knife is interesting. Say what you will about the Friday the 13th films, because, of course, that's just about sitting there waiting for Jason to kill people. But what you're waiting for is the new and interesting way in which he's going to do it. And Scream, it's always the one way. People get stabbed in the back
stomach.
Or the stomach,
yeah.
And die instantly. In fact, again, not to spoil anything, a character gets stabbed in the head and lives considerably longer than the guy who just took it in the back.
And is able to speak.
Again,
I thought after a prefrontal lobotomy, that was pretty much off limits.
Yeah, the movie has a tone-deaf ear for humor. There are attempts throughout the film to get laughs.
Were there?
Yes, including the moment you're just referencing. That's supposed to be a big laugh.
Oh, I thought that was...
There was another one at the end involving another character that was supposed to be funny, but again, it just falls flat. Wes Craven is an interesting guy because he has this reputation for being just a classic horror director, and he has a handful of good movies, but he has a lot of really bad movies too, and people don't talk about those.
That he does. Speaking of Bruce Willis, besides the MASH theory, I also kept thinking when I was watching this film of the Die Hard sequels,
mm-hmm.
and something that's peculiar, you see. early 21st century or something, that Patrick and I agree that Die Hard is just one of the best action films ever made.
The best.
And certainly was the blueprint for every action film that was made after it, and mm-hmm. it's tremendously great. And a couple weeks ago on cable, I caught Die Hard 2,
mm-hmm.
and I hadn't seen it in a dog's age, so mm-hmm. I watched it again. And one of the things I like least about it is at one point, maybe for the trailer, they actually have him turn around and say, "I can't believe the same thing is happening to the same guy." And that's moronic.
Yeah.
And that's all what Scream 4 is about.
Right.
Characters realizing right. that they're in a film. And you know what it made me think of? I'm a big James Bond fan, and I don't remember in any James Bond film James Bond stopping and saying, "Wait a minute. I keep meeting these supervillains. What are the odds?" Winkety, winkety, wink to the audience.
Right.
Back to the action.
Right.
Why do we need that? So the audience feels like they're in on something hip?
Yeah. I mean, that's the age we live in, again. And Scream sort of helped usher in, was a big part of sort of the age of irony, that the way to succeed is to create this weird self-aware distance between yourself and the audience, or between you and the thing that you're being.
And many people felt that 9/11 was the death of irony.
Yeah.
But now we know that Scream 4 is the death of irony.
Scream 4 is our 9/11.
I'm pausing because that's just so profound. Because you see, the two of us have seen the movie. see it, you'll know what we're talking about. Here's the transition.
Yeah.
Scream 4 is the death of irony. And the birth of cosmetic surgery. We have to talk about this.
Okay.
Maybe it bothered me more than you.
No, I mean it did.
Courtney Cox, God love her, has had some work.
Yeah.
And there are scenes in this film where her makeup and the lighting, my wife described it as a lizard face.
Right. She looks like a drag queen Courtney Cox impersonator.
It's an immobile mask,
right,
that doesn't move between her eyes and her mouth,
right,
and speaks to something being pulled back in Botox. And
but she's also done the thing of, like, I'm the pretty woman who's getting older, so I'm just going to work my arms. That Madonna,
yeah.
Now I have big buff biceps. She's got that going on.
And what's even worse, and man, this makes me sad, is Mary McDonnell, who...
Good thing she was in the movie.
Again, I don't mean to keep referencing my wife, but she's beautiful, sharp, and brilliant. And she didn't even realize it was Mary McDonnell until the end credits.
Really?
That Mary McDonnell has had so much work, much bad work, that during her last scene in the film, she is called upon because of the reality of the scene to make a face. Mm-hmm. And in making that face, she looks exactly like Catherine O'Hara at the end of For Your Consideration. Oh, my God. Why can't people get old?
It's very sad because I don't know why they think that this is preferable. I would rather see what Courtney Cox looks like at 45 than Courtney Cox at 45 trying to look 30.
One way that for a brief period I thought they would actually be clever. There's a scene near the end where one of the characters is duct taped to a patio chair. And clearly this is a reference to the beginning of the first movie.
Right.
Which I always hold close to my heart because for some demented reason, the unrated version of the first Scream was only ever released on Laserdisc. Mm-hmm. Kevin Williamson and Wes Craven did an audio commentary where they specifically point out the things that are unique to that version.
It's really only two shots.
Yeah. And VHS? No. DVD, later on. It's always been the R-rated cut. And then, in Scream 4, we get... It looks exactly like it. And I thought, they're going back there, and they're going to repeat that gag... And show it.
Right.
To sort of vindicate themselves.
Right.
And then they don't.
But they do something similar earlier in the film, and the film still gets an R rating. There's a character on a bed, sort of spilled out. And again, that gets an R. But
oh, okay.
Yeah.
It took me a couple of seconds, because I've already forgotten the film.
The movie that I was thinking of the whole time, because again, I have this big thing, whenever they go back to a franchise after years of being away, it Live Free or Die Hard, or Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, or Scream 4, I always think, well, you have to justify coming back to this after so many years away. You have to give us something new, or, and I don't mean you have to reinvent yourself, but justify coming back. And I think one of the few movies that sort of did that, and it's not even a movie I particularly love, interestingly enough, also written by Kevin Williamson, and that's Halloween H2O.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a lot of ways, what Halloween H2O did, it stuck with Jamie Lee Curtis. It dealt with how do I face my past? How do I face this thing that is still after me that won't let me go? While still sort of introducing a new cast of characters because people have to be killed off, but not in such a way that they ran away with the movie and Jamie Lee Curtis wasn't in the film very much. It was still very much, I think, her story. That I think Halloween H2O did a lot of the things that Scream 4 should have done right.
And that's clearly the film that Neve Campbell feels that she's in.
And if there were more scenes like that with her, I would have liked the film better.
Her vibe is she's in this small independent film about this victim
who's
really tired of being victimized.
Right.
And as I mentioned before, there's an early scene between David Arquette and Neve Campbell that has this really nice, easy chemistry because if you're a horror fan, these are characters that we have an amount of affection for. And have we passed the mark where we could start spoiling?
sure, let's get into spoilers at this moment. So if you haven't seen the movie and you want to, stop listening now. Although we will say before you turn this off, you probably shouldn't see Scream 4. If you haven't figured it out, we are not recommending Scream 4
at all. We're not ruining anything. We're saving you $9.
That's exactly right. Spend it on Super on demand.
For just a second, I thought you were telling them to take the money and buy soup.
Save it for soup. I thought you were going to say the apocalypse is coming.
So just very quickly, let me finish this.
Are we in spoilers now?
Yes.
Okay.
Near the end.
Yeah.
We have the three original cast members.
Yes.
And I kind of like that.
Sure.
And
that it comes back to them.
And maybe if the film had been more about that, and maybe if the three of them had found more time on their schedules to film more scenes together, you would have the film that clearly Neve Campbell signed on to make and thinks she's in.
Yes. And I think there's even a movie to be made. See, I think Scream is so afraid of seeming old-fashioned because I think there's a movie to be made if you focus on these three characters and have them, they're old school now because they are. The original movie's 15 years old and you make it about them and how they're old school and there's these punks with their cameras or whatever, but the focus is on the old school. See, the movie sides with the hip youngsters and their cameras and that's wrong. Focus on the old school.
And that's such a mistake for them to be afraid of it. And this might be the worst illustration of this point possible, but it's getting late. I always thought, beyond the film's other charms, I really liked the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
As do I.
And one of the reasons is, it is extremely old-fashioned. It's a movie that could have been made in the 50s.
Yeah.
It has this epic scope, and it's beautiful to look at, and very classical drama, and very classical dialogue. And it's retro, and you watch it, and it's nostalgic. And clearly, the amount of money that film made, and the affection that it engendered, imagine the Pirates of the Caribbean version. Man, it's a weird metaphor. Of Scream 4, where maybe you slow it down a little bit, you focus on these three people, you actually try to say something about them, and you scare the crap out of us.
And again, the movie you're talking about is Halloween H2O. That's that movie. Yeah. It's about a small number of people. It has something to say about this character and where she's been. It tries to be scary, but it's not just an endless series of gory stabbings or whatever.
And really, make no mistake, stream, don't go to the movie, stream it for free on some website. This film monotonously goes back and forth between the sudden shock, the music sting,
mm-hmm.
and someone being stabbed someplace and blood shooting out.
Right. Over and over and over again. So we're in spoilers now. It's the Alison Brie parking garage sequence that I was talking about, that as soon as I knew, okay, now she's alone, I can just be bored until she's dead and out of the movie. And I really like Alison Brie.
Yes.
I really like her.
Trust me, folks.
So it made me sad to see her taken out of the movie, but at the same time, I was just like, I just have to sit and wait for her to be dead, because we know it's coming, it's just a matter of how long do we have to wait?
And why can't the film at least be clever enough to have some of these scenes where the person...
Again,
that doesn't get it.
That's where suspense comes in.
Yeah,
and it's the Saw movies. When Mike and I did that Saw podcast, we said, you know, horror movies sort of, the movies would work better, the Saw movies, not that they're great, but they would work better if sometimes the people didn't die.
Yeah.
Because then you're sitting there wondering, are they going to get out of this or aren't they? We know the answer is no, they're not. They're going to die. And Scream 4 is the same thing. Unless someone gets away, we know it ends with them being stabbed.
And it's so funny that you point out that the minute Alison Brie is in this underground parking garage and suddenly we're in a movie that we've seen hundreds of times before, my wife, God love her, leaned towards me and said, because there's a close-up of her feet walking on the pavement, my wife leaned over and said, are those a dog's legs? And she was referencing the film Bowfinger, where the body double of this one character is a dog that they put women's shoes on. So you see, this is how entertaining Scream 4 is. You go to the theater, and you have to make your own entertainment. Speaking of which,
yes,
we can't
not talk about this.
Wait, go back to, don't forget your point, but I was just going to say the Alison Brie, I don't know if it's the parking garage sequence or the end of that where she goes over and lands on the van.
Yeah.
One of those was a reshoot that they went back and said, well, we need to add more gore, higher body count, more characters dying, bigger death, so they shoot her going over the thing. I don't know, but one of those is a reshoot.
We saw this tonight at a regular movie theater, and there were some children in the theater.
Yeah.
And I'm not a stickler for this, but I don't think they were old enough to get in. And at the beginning of the movie, they had this, they were constantly running down the steps, and it would make this big noise, and then they would run back up, and they were sort of getting exercise and running around. And then when the film really got going, they were very, very vocal. In fact, at some points, I thought their sounds were on the soundtrack. Because very often when someone got it, one of these girls would scream
right
very loudly in the theater. And I thought, well, on the one hand, they're teenagers, and this film is supposed to be fun, and they're enjoying it and all that. But then I began to think about this a little bit more. And in Scream 4 itself, there's a scene where a whole bunch of teenagers get together to watch movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're having a stabathon.
Right.
And they're drinking, and they're yelling things at the screen. And so Scream 4 is teaching its own audience right. how to act right. in a film
right.
so you get what you deserve.
And again, even that sequence, of, you know, the ghost face shows up and stalks one of the characters.
Around bales of hay.
Right, because that's a thing while everyone's setting up webcams. There are competing webcams going on. That's how fucking stupid this movie is. While the original Stab plays, which of course is a shot-for-shot remake of the original Scream, but with Heather Graham and the Drew Barrymore part, and we originally saw that in Scream 2. That's how Scream 2 opened. And the opening of Scream 2 is pretty great. That's one of the things that works about Scream 2.
Yeah.
And now we're just repeating that scene less successfully.
And of course, there's a scary scene going on in the hay bales, and no one sees because the sound of the reality scary scene blends with the soundtrack of the movie, and now we're in irony hell.
You had said that you liked the scene at the end with the three original characters, and I agree with you. I thought the same thing. It was too bad that so much shit had come before it. But Neve Campbell's last line of the movie rang so false to me, and it's not a bad line. She dispatches the killer and says, "You forgot the rule of remakes. Don't fuck with the original."
Yeah.
And that's fine, and that's a funny line, because haha, we horror fans say, yeah, don't fuck with the original, and it applies to Neve Campbell, and it's fine. But it just rang so false to me, because she was never a character that knew that much about horror films. And I feel like since the events of the first, I'm overthinking this, I know, but since the events of the first Scream film, she would have had nothing to do with horror films. She wants to be as far away from that as possible. So like you said, every character has to be super savvy. It rings so false.
Every character.
That this character would be so savvy about horror films and would know the rule of remakes.
And we've seen so many films like this where an act of shocking violence is followed by a lame quip. At this, in this film, near the end, Neve Campbell dispatches one of the characters in what was a reasonably novel way.
Yeah, okay. It wasn't somebody getting stabbed, so no. I guess I could be happy about that. I think it's the
knife.
Only one, yeah.
No knife. And I just kept waiting for the close-up of her delivering the quip. And I kept expecting Wes Craven to cut to a full-blown close-up of Neve Campbell saying, "It's electrifying." Because at that point, I had checked out, and I was mocking the film in the theater of my mind.
Yeah, there's nothing else you can do. So, again, we're in spoilers, so allow me to say, I had a lot of problems with the performance of Emma Roberts. I thought it was dull and lifeless, and she's too much like a dumb regular teenager to hold a movie.
Yeah.
You know, like she's a kid that you're not interested in talking to because she's just vacant.
And so at the end with the big reveal, we sit in the audience and we go, no.
Exactly.
No. This is the script. This isn't anything that organically comes out of your character.
And that's true, I think, of all the Scream sequels. Again, in the first movie, like you said, it makes sense and it works.
It's
and
devilishly clever.
Right. And I was proud of myself for being just a little bit ahead of the original Scream, because when you don't see Skeet Ulrich, when you don't see the knife going into him, his back is to the camera, you know, oh, something's up. There's a reason we didn't explicitly see him stabbed. The sequels all reveal the identity of the killer, and it's always arbitrary. Always. You know, really? How could we have guessed that? And the problem is that the movie does sort of bank on being a mystery. What is the identity of the killer? And it gets to this, and like you said, it is completely arbitrary. It could have been...
Well, in another way, this film is lazy. From the very beginning, there's this ex-boyfriend character,
right,
who... perhaps in the next installment of Scary Movie, they'll actually do this. The minute he appears on the screen, there should be a yellow flashing arrow,
right,
saying red herring.
Right.
That we are delivering this young boy so conveniently as, I bet it's him,
right,
that there's no way it could be.
And again, the way to turn the movie on its head, and they even point to this in one of the scenes where they say, cliche is the new something. Have it be that guy.
Yeah.
Because we've written him off because it's so obviously not him.
And so I can't think of a film that's ever done that.
Have it be the guy that you most expect.
And have the earlier scenes be even more obvious,
right,
as,
right,
thrusting him forward.
Right. What? One of the lines is so fucking stupid. I got so... I mean, there's a lot of stupid lines. It's the Culkin kid at the end. Maybe it's not at the end. He says something like... crazy is the new sane or something.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you can't just say things and expect them to mean something. You can't just write shit down and have people say it and like, yeah, crazy is the new sane. That's awesome.
And then later in the film, the Culkin character, he almost whispers it. He says, my brother was once famous.
There are red hair throughout. At one point, I thought it was going to be Marley Shelton because of a line of dialogue about on the phone with Sydney, where it's like, you left this town and you forgot all about us. And a scene that she has earlier sort of,
right,
points to that. At one point, moments before Mary McDonnell, again, we're in spoilers, is stabbed in the back of the head through a door and then makes the Catherine O'Hara face. I thought it could be her. Because she has that whole, I have scars. You knew it was going to be
family. Oh, I thought
family.
She was being set up,
right,
as a secondary red herring.
Right.
One more thing that's wrong with this film.
It exists.
That for a film that wants us to believe it's taking place in reality, it does not. It takes place in Screamland. And I came up with another example. At Sydney's book signing, they show her standing in the middle of a bookstore at a podium, reading from this book, and everyone who's there is standing around her almost in a circle. I've been to author readings, and I've been to author signings. Who staged that? Someone who had never actually been to a bookstore. And the most egregious example is the end of the film takes place in a hospital that couldn't possibly exist in any reality. And again, kudos to my wife for pointing this out. At one point she said, what hospital is this?
Right.
Because a character is in intensive care, there are no doctors and no nurses to be seen.
Right. They've just been brought in with multiple stab wounds.
All the lights are
They've
off.
They've been attacked by killers. They might have some security on them.
So at this hospital at 10 o'clock, it's lights out and the staff goes home. You have those machines to keep you alive.
And
we'll be back at 8.
Characters are constantly yanking things out of their arms and little alarms are going off, but no one rushes in to see what is the matter.
And as someone else pointed out, for a film that's full of teenagers, there are no parents.
Yeah.
I kept waiting for the Charlie Brown trombone invisible
and
parent
that, and
voice
again, that's
to come.
Sort of part of, I think, the Scream series.
But think about the first one.
Well, the first one is sort of about the sins of the... Yeah, right.
And there were lots of parents. There was
Billy
Skeet Ulrich's
dad.
Obnoxious dad.
Yeah,
and all sorts of dads.
Yeah. Yeah, Sydney had a dad.
And moms.
And an absent mom, who factored in a lot in the third movie, but that was a bad movie.
Another example of where this film goes awry is clearly they are setting up a situation in this fourth one where there is no way that you can figure it out because they're really not concerned with giving you the raw materials to figure it out.
Right.
The culprit, the villain, is whoever is left at the end, as
right.
you pointed out.
Right.
And I remember the audio commentary on the original and Wes Craven saying they realized early on that in some of the shots of Ghostface, you can see the shoes he was wearing. So then they took very special care to show several of the characters wearing exactly the same pair of shoes because they were trying to seal up that hole. That sort of care is non-existent in Scream 4.
No, not at all. Again, right, it's whoever we say it is, and you're basically just sitting there waiting because you can't really play the guessing game, like you said, so you're just waiting for the movie to reveal it to you, and there's no fun in that.
In fact, the original title of Kevin Williamson's first draft, this film was originally called Okay, Who's Left?
And again, it's Emma Roberts, and she can't carry what she needs to carry. Although I will say I did sort of enjoy, after she has theoretically done away with everyone, she goes about looking, staging it so that it looks like she's been beaten up. And I actually sort of enjoyed that sequence. She stabs herself in the shoulder, she rams her face into a mirror, she throws herself through a glass coffee table, and that was kind of amusing to watch.
But I wondered, and I enjoyed that sequence too, because for one brief moment, it was batshit.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's her performance. I think that's the script and the way it was shot and edited.
Oh, for sure. No, I'm not giving her credit for that at all. It was just, that was the only thing she was even involved with that I thought, well, I enjoyed that little section.
And in the land of pipe dream casting, I had mentioned before, what if Alison Brie played that character? Maybe she would have brought something to the party. Why don't we have Emma Roberts and Hayden Panettiere switch roles?
That would be okay, too.
I think that would have worked better.
Right. Again, so much time is spent with Scream the New Class, and it's just, we don't care about these people. They're, I don't know, the young characters in the original Scream, they felt like teenagers, but they also had a maturity to them, and they were compelling to watch. And I don't know if it's just how much, I sound super old, but like how much teenagers have changed in 15 years, but these just seem like bratty kids.
They're interchangeable, right. And I think about Francis Ford Coppola and how he was lauded that when he cast The Outsiders, he had this unerring eye for talent.
Right.
And it was just like, oh, look at all these young actors who got their start. If you look at the original cast of Scream, they're all different. They're all wonderful. They all wound up having careers. Matthew Lillard, who really brings something to the party, and Rose McGowan in what was surely one of her first films? That was a much more interesting group of people than this party.
And again, there were fewer of them, which makes a difference. You mentioned the opening earlier, and I will say that there's one thing that the opening does that's sort of clever. I mean, it starts, and it's just really, we have to sit through this again, and the acting is bad, and the dialogue is bad, and then it pulls back. Oh, it's supposed to be bad. Okay, I get it. And in the second one, I think they did something clever, and that is, it pulls back, we realize we're watching a movie. It's two characters watching Stab 5?
Six or seven. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. And it pulls back, and the two characters watching this stab are Anna Paquin and Kristen Bell, two famous actresses. And so I immediately settle into, now we're in the reality of the film, because this is the Drew Barrymore part. We have established celebrities, so they're going to be the two that are stalked by the killer. And then the movie again does a third pullback and reveals, no, that's a movie too. And I think it was very clever to actually cast that middle one with actual stars.
Yes. And about halfway through the train wreck that is Scream 4, I thought to myself, what if they had the guts, pardon the pun, to start with a bad movie, and then we pull back, and someone's watching a movie. And now it's Kristen Bell and Anna Paquin, and they're watching a movie, and then, oh, horrors. And then we pull back, and, oh, it was a film within a film. What if the entire movie, Scream 4, was them continuing to do that and pulling back? And with each further sequence, it gets longer,
and convinces you more that this is the movie, and just when you're buying into, okay, finally, this is the film, it pulls back again. Man, that would have been the greatest thing ever.
A very difficult trick to pull off, but perhaps.
And actually, I believe someone already has, because there's a Louis Buñuel film called The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie that continually plays, we're watching this thing, and we're watching it for an amount of time, and then he pulls back, and it's a stage play, and then he pulls... It would have been one of the greatest... Think about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And I'm not clever.
Right.
But that's a movie I want to see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Scream 4 is not clever either, but don't tell Scream 4, because they sure think they are.
And then they could have called it Scream 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, and actually put that on the poster.
And it's so disappointing. Not that the Anna Paquin, Kristen Bell stuff is so great, although it does...
It's really short.
It is really short. And the punchline is something that you don't totally see coming, except a half second before it happens.
Yeah.
But then when it pulls back to the next thing, it's so much less interesting than what had come before it. And it's like, oh, this sucks. Go back to the fake thing. That was better to watch.
That it becomes this good fake sandwich where the first thing is bad, and then the middle thing is interesting, and then it's like, oh, we have to go back to bad?
Yeah, right.
Which, again, is another reason to pull back again. Or how about this? Have it alternate. Maybe that's the zeitgeist of the film. That we're constantly going back and forth between really bad, deliberately mediocre stuff, and then really good stuff. And then right when you're with the good stuff, oh, no, it's another movie. And then maybe one of the movies that's fake that we pull back from is a musical.
Yeah, that's the Scream 4 I want to see. Well, don't worry, Kevin Williamson has said that if this movie's a hit, he has another trilogy in mind, so that we could possibly have Scream 5 and 6.
I just threw up in my mouth.
Right. I mean, this movie has nothing left to say. How are they going to get two more movies out of this? I don't know.
In the immortal words of Kurt Laxo, God love him, when this movie was over, I was a little bit less alive.
Don't go see Scream 4, everybody. I guess that's all we have to say. So remember, you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you have suggestions for movies you want to hear us do shows about, visit our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com. We have lots of new features and articles, and we're doing new things with the site.
And there's new things coming.
On the horizon. So keep checking the site. And JB, how do you want to take us out?
Ow! I've just been stabbed! Sound of blood coming out of my mouth. Fade to black.
Pull back. It's a movie!